This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
We are talking with retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendapper today, and we're not talking about the Daybells. Yay! Time to move on to other horrible people. No, today we are talking about Jared Breitigan. Jared, not the horrible person here, more so those around him. He's the one who was murdered. That is a case that I've been watching closely. I'm curious. We're seeing, obviously, the husband now of Jared's ex-wife. He has been charged. There was that friend that apparently did the hit, the guy who was renting from them. He said he's going to spill the beans and pled guilty. He's going to come out and say everything. And we have him arrested. What about the actual ex-wife? This seems to be kind of the missing piece in the puzzle. I know she's denied it. She's done interviews and all of that. But when your husband is the one who is being charged here, one has to believe or assume she had to know something about this, unless this was some surprise gift instead of flowers at the end of the day. Surprise, I killed your ex-husband. I was going to get flowers, but I thought you might like that better. I don't think that's how it went.
Right. Well, Mario Saldana is the husband of the ex-wife. Henry Tenen, the individual who was charged, who has now pled and turned, and he provided a plethora of evidence. You know, we've got text messages, we've got money transactions, we've got his testimony. It's strong.
Yeah.
So the ATF went down and arrested Mario. And I agree with you. I think that she is also culpable. I thought the press conference was so interesting by law enforcement and the prosecution team saying, this case is not over. Mm-hmm. And so I believe, you know, it a lot of it's going to depend on Mr. Saldana, if he stays loyal to his wife, or if he decides to turn. And remember, with him being charged now, they're going to have more evidence to look at, you know, computers of his, more telephones to go through, all of his movements. I believe they're working hard on all of this. This has been one of these cases that's a true combined law enforcement effort at all levels, where everybody got along and everybody worked toward a common goal. So they've done a great job making this conspiracy. I don't think they're done. I think it will end with her.
Why is she still free at this point would be my question. Because they have all this information now. They have text messages. They have emails. They have the confession of the friend who went and actually did the hit. Is there something going on where there just isn't anything yet to truly tie her as being the one that says, go do this? Or is it, let's let her linger out here and we're going to keep a tail on her and see if she digs anything else up for us along the way. And eventually we will get her.
Well, the link to the murderer, if you will, Henry Tenen, there's a direct link between he and Mario, the husband. But no link, seemingly, that I've heard about anything in evidence to link her with the killer directly. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be linked with Mario. Yes, they have the phones. Yes, they I'm sure they've pored over it. But they were working on this part of the case, linking Henry and Mario so they could make their case against Mario. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to be working on the case between Mario and the ex-wife.
Okay.
So I think it's a process that's happening right now. They're probably going to try to offer maybe Mario something. As you know, he's been charged with first-degree murder. Henry Tenen, who committed the murder, pled to second-degree murder, of course, because of his cooperation.
Yeah.
So will they offer that to Mario? I would bet they might.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting. She's got to be just, I would think, on pins and needles every single day, waiting for that knock on the door or that battering ram through the door, one of the two, and to be taken away. I can't imagine, the anxiety that one must be going through, although maybe you don't feel that sort of anxiety if you ordered a hit on your husband, allegedly.
Oh, I think she's got anxiety, and she's probably thinking about, any conversation she had with friends, with family, that could come back to bite her. Anything she might have said about her hatefulness toward him, you know, the issues with the children, custody, blah, blah, blah. I think we're going to see that law enforcement is with a fine-tooth comb talking to witnesses and really poring over her computer searches, et cetera, et cetera. They've switched their focus now. They've got Saldana. Now they're on to her.
Where are the children right now?
They're in her care and custody, is my understanding.
Ooh. Yeah, that's kind of scary. Why?
Somebody that could be capable of that, right? But it was very targeted at her hate. But I agree with you. When somebody has the capability of cold-bloodedly, I mean, they put a tire in the road. It's very well planned. Got him to pull over and then executed him. I mean, I was thinking of The Godfather.
Yeah.
You know, getting Sonny to go through the toll booth. I mean, this wasn't just this was well-conceived, a well-conceived plan with multiple characters, players, with money. So I agree with you. People who are capable of murder are capable of murdering others.
Well, this would not be the first time that we've had a case where you have the spouse that had something to do with the murder of the other spouse, still have the kids, and things start getting pretty hairy and things are closing in, and suddenly it's a murder-suicide where things end up. It just seems like this is something we could be looking at from a distance going, we can prevent this pretty easily. Why are we doing this? Just in case.
No, you're exactly right. It's that whole attitude of annihilation. Familial annihilation. We saw it in Murdaugh, you know, where somebody is looking at losing everything and they take everyone with them that they care about the most.
Well,
so
one,
let's hope not. Let's hope that doesn't happen in this case. But I agree with you. You know, it should be a red flag.
100%. Let's talk Corey Richens a little bit, the children's book author. This is an interesting one. I've just begun to kind of start to dive into it. What stands out to you in this case? She wrote the children's book, did a little bit of TV. As you've been starting to examine this case, what fascinates you?
Well, what fascinates me about her is these repeated attempts we're hearing about. The fact that this family wasn't your average family. These were multimillionaires. The house that apparently caused a lot of consternation between the couple was worth millions, sitting up outside of Park City, Utah, I believe, 20,000 square feet.
Yeah.
She wanted to spend another $2 million to revamp it. He didn't. She ended up flipping it, selling it, and then having a party just right after his death. You know, with friends and all that's going to come back to bite her. So I guess the point is this was long coming, to the point that he was so concerned, he changed his life insurance, his beneficiaries.
Yeah.
And that tells me a lot when you're that concerned. Some would argue, well, then why would he accept a Moscow mule, you know, which ended up being laced with fentanyl, but you know, inherently good people, they don't like to think that their spouse is really trying to kill them.
Yeah.
Because they got sick after a drink previously. So, or a meal previously. So it's so sad. It's so tragic. But what sticks out to me has to be the book she wrote after the death, this book about grief, you know, a child's book, you know, what they went through without him. It's just to me, again, if she's convicted of this, it's just pure evil. To try to benefit monetarily or just benefit in terms of grandioseness, you know, putting yourself out there. So like a Munchausen, so people feel sorry for you. All of it is just seedy and evil to me.
I was just going to ask you, what does it tell you about the person if they write a children's book about grief after their husband dies and they likely killed them? Evil. You answered that. It pretty much is. It's 100% evil. With that and that interview that she did you see that in its entirety on that morning show in her local area where she does the interview about the book?
Yeah, I saw at least 2 to 3 minutes. If she spoke longer than that, I didn't see the whole thing, but sure. I've seen that snippet.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because did you garner anything out of it? I found it bizarre that she was actively telling people she was single and ready to mingle, if you will, in the middle of it, the book about death and grief. But what did you get out of that interview? It did not seem like your typical, you know, book about your husband who died and this is grief. It just seemed like I wrote this book to help kids. I don't have any personal experience in the matter. That's what it kind of felt like. It didn't feel like a true, mother or wife who is, you know, going through that.
You know, exactly. What woman, I mean, I can't even imagine. I know everybody deals with grief differently. Yeah. And I accept that and I understand that. We've seen that. But she was on there, you know, just nonchalantly, really, you know, kind of in a, I don't want to say provocative. What's the word I'm looking for, Tony? Where you're just chatting about this book. There was no grief.
Yeah.
Where was the grief? Where were the tears? Where was the, you know, when you feel like you have lemons in your throat mm-hmm. and you're choking back because you're remembering all your beautiful moments with your husband, your family, the yeah. fact that it's all gone. And you're sort of just on there talking about like a coffee table book.
There was no humanity. That I think yeah. is the word. There was no humanity to the moment. It almost reminded me a bit of Lori Vallow in the interrogation room right after her husband's dead. Granted, you know, you're going through a divorce. Things aren't great. But your husband just got shot. You would have something. And I know, like, when she wrote the book, the husband had died about a year earlier. So you probably moved through some things. But, yeah, it didn't seem to add up emotionally. Motive-wise, though, what are we looking at with something like this? Someone is going to continually attempt to poison their husband because we've heard that this wasn't just the first try. The Moscow Mule finally did it. But why? Why do that to someone? Why not just get divorced? And why take the risk of getting caught at something like that? I mean, even more importantly, why kill somebody doing this?
Why most of them do. The tale as old as time, money. It's all green. You know, he had a lot of money. I think she thought she was going to benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And I think it all had to do with greed. And of course, also the children also tie into that, right? Mm-hmm. Sole control of the children, not splitting time with them, all the things that divorce, can entail. I think she wanted it all. And I think she thought this was a means to an end and that she wouldn't get caught. And then she'd write a book about it to make it even look more like she wasn't involved and make some bucks on the side.
And for a while it worked. But it did catch up.
It caught up. But, you know, it always catches up. These criminals think they're so smart, but they're not. There's very few that really get away with a crime like this. Some do. But, no, this one, when you start making deals with fentanyl distributors, drug dealers, mm-hmm. you know, you bring people in your circle that have no loyalty towards you. And that are going to tell the truth when they're interviewed. And that was, you know, the big part of the case, I think, that will be her demise.
Is that how she got caught? Because that's what I wanted to ask you. What brought the charges on a year after the death and such?
Well, I think the first thing is looking at that autopsy report. If I'm an investigator and I look at the toxicology attached to that report and I see 5 times the lethal limit of fentanyl, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, this isn't recreational. I mean, fentanyl typically is used to cut other drugs. Mm-hmm. I would be interviewing, and from all the interviews I've seen of his family, and I've seen several, there was absolutely no drug use issue mm-hmm. That anybody reported. So that would be a clue. And then I would just take it from there. And with interviews, I think get a picture of what type of marriage and what type of life they were living. There's also, I believe, individuals interviewed that indicated she may have had a long withstanding relationship outside of her marriage. Mm-hmm. Now, I haven't seen that in an official police report, so I want to caveat that by saying that. But that's another possible motivation that entered into all of this. It's a really interesting one, I think. It's very unusual. Just even the fentanyl, mm-hmm. right? Most people who kill their spouse, they seem to use rat poison, you know, cyanide, something that would be readily available at a hardware store.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was very interesting. It's the first case I've heard about where a spouse picked fentanyl as their drug of choice to kill. And I'm not even sure she knew, fentanyl per se, right?
I don't think she did.
The Michael Jackson drug, right?
Propofol. It wasn't even the Michael Jackson drug. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure really if she had much knowledge about illicit drugs or what she would need, but she knew she needed something quote unquote strong. And that's what she did. I mean, she dumped a lethal amount in that Moscow Mule, and it's just very, very odd.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Jennifer Coffendaffer, as always, thank you so much for your insight and for being on the program today. We can't thank you enough. Hey, if you like listening and you'd like an ad-free experience, we have that for you on Apple Podcasts. There you get access to not only this podcast ad-free, but all of our podcasts ad-free. More than 10 of them. More than 10 true crime podcasts for you to binge away on, and we're adding new ones all the time. Check us out. Check out our channel page, our subscription channel page on Apple Podcasts, and subscribe there. Even try it for 3 days free and get access to everything ad-free. You can binge. We do greatly appreciate that. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.